A jail stint can really disrupt someone's life. You can lose a job, a relationship, or thousands of dollars on fees, fines, and bail.
Have I ever gone to jail? Yeah, I just got out, actually.
If he doesn't show up to court, you gotta pay the $50,000.
No ring exchange, no kiss the bride. There's no glamour in a jailhouse wedding.
Off the Block. All six episodes tracing the path from city block to jail block and back are now available on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
Pentecostals believe in speaking in tongues and laying on of hands and healing the sick. Sunday mornings, we would usually run into church maybe 5 minutes late, and we would walk in after rows and rows of people. There was a big stage with like drums and guitars and a piano. Sometimes there would be people waving flags around. There were people with like 5-foot-long banners that they wave during church, and people with tambourines, and often people speaking in tongues during worship. And I think that people really believed that God was speaking through their peers and through their friends and family. There was a really strong belief that people could be possessed by demons, and everyone's perceived worst behaviors were somehow correlated to the devil and to demons.
Did you ever speak in tongues?
Yeah, there was a very specific time. Somebody had traveled to the church to speak at the church, and they were saying, "Today is the day for the Lord to give people the gift of tongues," and who in the audience or who in the church body would like to receive the gift of tongues? And of course, I think it was like 10 or 11, and I was like, I want to do this thing that everybody else gets to do. And they walked up to the front and they said, "Just wait for it and it'll come to you, and you'll hear it like as a quiet voice in your head, and then just say what you hear." And I remember just like standing for a very long time, probably like 30 or 40 minutes with this guy praying over me, and then just being like, "Are you getting it?" And I'm like, no, not really. And then eventually you just kind of come up with something and it starts coming out. And the more you start making these sounds, the more you're like, oh, maybe this is a thing. Everybody else was doing it around me, so it seemed weird that I wasn't doing it yet, and so I started doing it.
What does it sound like when you speak in tongues?
Oh my gosh, I cannot do that. As much as I don't go to church and don't believe in that anymore, doing that and kind of like reproducing that would feel kind of dirty and awful. Because to them, it's such an important thing.
Did you believe you were going to heaven?
I believed that within my lifetime, I would get this dealt with. And I would marry a woman and I would leave it behind me. And Jesus would forgive me of my sins, and yes, I would go to heaven. But it was very clear that I had to deal with it, or I would be going to hell.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
what the devil wanted you to believe about yourself.
the podcast about
the unknown.
I was watching some real world movie, which means that it's not a reality TV show, but it's a faked movie about the real world. And there's this scene where this guy is giving he's giving some kind of talk about how he has these feelings and he misses his boyfriend from home. And then the cameraman comes from behind the camera and they start kissing. And the camera like drops to the ground or something, and then you see one of the guy's pants drop, and I was just like, oh my god, these two men are gonna have sex and I'm gonna see their feet moving. And my parents don't even know that we have MTV on our cable, because I think it was a mistake. And I just remember feeling so many good endorphin feelings, even before I even had a correlation between like masturbating and orgasm. I remember seeing that and just being like, this is amazing. But at the same time, I cannot tell anyone about this. This is a real problem. I was regularly told by my parents, my dad, my whole community that like men like women, men don't like men. Men that like men were probably abused as children, were probably kind of, the devil had worked in their life in some harmful way, and that's why they liked men. And, like, those people are broken and gross.
Did you feel broken and gross?
Oh, absolutely. Because I think I thought of it as, like, either it was the devil was in me or it was a sickness that I needed to be healed from. And I knew this was a terrible sin, and I was frustrated and feeling super isolated and super horny and super believing that I was probably possessed or the devil had a large hand in me. And I remember saying out loud, I invite a demon to come into me.
What were you expecting?
I think that my perception of the devil and the darkness of the world was that it was this like lusty sexual underworld of kind of forbidden things, and the price was going to heaven. I didn't think that I was really a Christian anymore, and I thought that I might as well invite the world of like sex and pleasure and all the things that I couldn't have because I was gay. And so I was laying in bed in my room in the dark on my bed, and I hadn't closed my eyes, but I was just laying there looking at the ceiling in my room. And that was when I heard the voice coming from the right side of my bed. And it was so terrifying. And it was exactly like I had always imagined it would sound like if a demon spoke to you. Like this black heaviness came down from like my feet all the way up to my chest, and I could not move. I couldn't get up and I couldn't say any words. The only thing I could think to say was Jesus, and if I would say the word Jesus, then it would go away. And it was about 15 minutes later that I was able to kind of stopped. My first reaction was to get up and turn the lights on. And I looked at my bed, and I really had thought that I had been so scared that maybe I'd peed the bed because it was so wet. And it wasn't. It was just my whole body was soaked with sweat. And I immediately went out my door and down the hall into my dad's room and knocked on the door. And he was very surprised because why is his teenage son waking him up in the middle of the night? And I wasn't like crying, but I was in that place of fear where you're just like, you just freeze up and you can't even really explain how scared you are. And I said, I think a demon came into my room tonight and was speaking in my ear. And he could see it on my face, and he sat me down in the living room and he prayed over me and he walked me to my room. I think for him, he was just as surprised as I was, and he didn't really think this could possibly happen to his son and his house. And he just held my hand, and I think he probably would have said something like, Father God, my son was visited by a demon tonight. We need your peace and we need your protection so that he can go to sleep and that he can rest knowing that you have him safe. We ask that you cleanse this house of anything that visited tonight and ask that you give him the rest of the righteous and that you would wash him of any sins that might have invited this into the house. And the next day I signed up to go to this spiritual boot camp.
And your dad had a role in spiritual boot camp, right?
He would run these like weekend kind of spiritual boot camps where people would process through all of their deepest, darkest secrets or shameful experiences. I think his main focus was like helping people in believing that they were good people and that because of Jesus Christ, they had the power to overcome these struggles in life. I had heard a lot of people tell stories that they felt like a totally new person, and that's really what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a new person. I wanted to not have to deal with this anymore. There was this funny thing that they made you do where you had to put a name tag on and they made up the name. You didn't make up the name. And these name tags were what they believed was what the devil wanted you to believe about yourself. And you had to wear that name tag all day. You even had to wear that name tag on your lunch break. And if you left the property to go to Quiznos, you would be wearing a name tag. And they were essentially your greatest shames and your greatest fears about who you really were. Not who you aspired to be and not who you told your community that you were, but kind of this deep, dark secret of who you really were. And the idea of doing that was so that they could remove this name tag and give you a new name, essentially. And you could have the true identity that Jesus Christ, you know, died on the cross for you to have. The identity of really who you were born to be. And I think my name, it wasn't, I always remember it as Stupid Faggot because that's who I really felt like it was, that I wasn't smart enough, and that above all else, I was a faggot, and that was the problem. But I know that they changed the name to something that I can't even remember today, because they didn't want to use that word. Because they asked, what's your greatest fear of who do you think you really are? When people get to know who you really are, who do you think that you really are? If all of your secrets are out on the table, no, who do you think you are? And my dad left the room because he couldn't handle the obvious anxiety that I was under. They were asking me, who are you? And then I just said, I'm a stupid faggot. And the room went totally silent. And I had never felt more like the outsider ever in a room where people were like, I'm addicted to pornography. I'm an overeater. I can't, you know, I stress about paying my bills too much. I don't trust in Jesus enough. And then they turned to me and I'm gay. I'm really, really fucking gay. And they were disgusted and they were confused. And they didn't understand why the oldest son of one of the elders in the church, who they thought was, you know, very perfect, was committing a sin that was to them the most gross and other and strange. They wanted to find out why I was gay. What have you done that makes you gay? There was a lot of people ask me if I had been abused as a child. Maybe I had a way of speaking that was gay, and they could identify that now, and they understood why I spoke the way that I did, and they pointed that out. They were like, do you think that you're maybe gay because people have told you that you're gay since you were young because of the way that you speak? And I said, well, when I was in middle school, people did, you know, call me names. But I think all kids, you know, all boys call each other gay and stupid and stuff like that. But for me, it stuck. And for me, it really hurt. And the uncomfortable thing about that was that I think everyone in the room believed that gay men are gay because they have bad fathers. And they knew that he wasn't a bad father. After this weekend, I didn't feel converted. I didn't feel like I was now straight, but I felt like I had done a lot of work and that maybe I was, you know, a substantial distance down the road towards being straight. And I think they were happy for me. They were happy because I was happy. And I think my dad was happy to see. This would like probably break his heart. But, like, he was probably happy to see that, like, the son that he had imagined happening and having, the straight son, was closer to becoming a reality. And that maybe after this weekend I would be more prone to go getting married and having grandchildren and continuing the story that is his life and his parents and... Yeah. At the end of the whole thing, we did this like trust fall-y thing that wasn't a trust fall. It was like four people with their hands clasped together, and they would have you lay down. No, so eight people, like four people on this side, four people on that side. And then have you lay down in these people's arms. And you were horizontal and parallel to the ground, lifted up at arm's height from the ground. And they would turn the lights down really low. And they would play this one song that they thought was like really perfect for you. And they would kind of invite God and the Holy Spirit to come and minister to you and bring healing to you. And it was actually like one of the most wonderful, comforting feelings in the world, because you're being held by all these people and they're just slightly swaying, like from left and to right. And I remember the song that they played. It's kind of cheating because my dad knew that I loved the song, but they played I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly, and I were just sobbing the whole time because it's just, we had been through such an emotionally like taxing and horrible weekend, and then my favorite song from when I was like a little boy and none of this was a problem and I never felt gay and I didn't like have any shame about anything. now looking at it as like an out gay man who's very happy and not ashamed of it, I know that they were all super well-meaning. And they all didn't do this because they really thought I was disgusting, but I think they did it because they wanted to help me. And they cared about me, and they're all still, you know, great people. But the experience that I had was just really, really, really upsetting.
Was it a demon that visited you that night?
I don't think so. After seeing a therapist and asking him about this, because I was very afraid of what this could mean for my mental health, he said, this is not a real mental health issue. It's an issue of sleep paralysis and auditory hallucinations that can happen before sleep. And that's what I believe, and that's what I think that you should have to believe so that you can be a sane person that goes to sleep at night. I really don't think that it was a demon. Because if me doing what I did when I was 13 and 14 invited a demon, then everything I do today as an adult should be inviting lots of demons.
It's been 13 years since Jacob Sutton heard the voice of a demon in his bedroom. Since then, he stopped believing in God and the devil, at least not in the way that he was taught to as a kid. He also eventually came out to his family for good this time and was met with open arms. He and his boyfriend have been together for almost 3 years. Today, he lives in Seattle and studies fashion design. As always, be sure to check out our website, hbmpodcast.com. Right now you can find a clip from a TV special about Pentecostal Christians worshiping and speaking in tongues. Again, that's at hbmpodcast.com. This episode was produced by me, Bethany Denton, aka Buster Baxter, with help from Jeff Emptman, who says he's going to dress up as a giant hand for Halloween this weekend. Nick White is a curmudgeon who let his Halloween spirit die years ago. He's also our editor at KCRW. Music on this episode from Saracel and Ahi. Here Be Monsters is part of the Independent Producer Project from KCRW. Happy Halloween, folks. Get freaky and stay safe. And if you happen to have a run-in with any ghosts or witches or killer clowns, be sure to send us a recording. All right, thanks for listening. More episodes soon.
In the middle of our story, I know you don't believe this, but a demon crawled in through the window, jumped into his urethra.
Just slipped
right inside of him, and he was possessed by the devil, and I haven't seen him since. Dun dun. I was practicing this in the bathroom today. Yeah, probably.